He is a man of his times. He's a man of our times. And he has become a legend. In your wisdom, Lord, you have lived through John as you have through so many other bright, flowering young actors before him. I'm talking about men like Clark Gable, Gabby Hayes, Roy Rogers, to keep in the whole Western thing, Groucho Marx, Jimmy Cagney. We could go on, but you get the idea. These men have lived for what they loved, and so have you, Walter. You have lived for acting that you have loved so well. And so, Walter Sobchak, John Goodman, in accordance with what we think may be your final wishes,
we all right, too good. Let's go, 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 go!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. Me? I'm Tom Merritt.
Me? I'm Brian Brushwood. Him? That's the dude. And the dude abides. That is
the dude that still abides.
That is Jeff Bridges reprising his role as Jeff the Big Lebowski. And I don't know if you picked up on it, but he's riffing on the eulogy that Walter gives. And you know, he's hitting it note for note. And that was at a ceremony for John Goodman getting his well-deserved star on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah. Made me want to go to Ralph's immediately.
Also, by the way,
I could swear that was George Lucas or a George Lucas impersonator standing back in the bottom right corner of that frame of video.
I don't know. We might have to go roll back the videotape. But in the meantime,
back and to the left.
Did you ever see? Oh, it does look like George Lucas in the back. I don't think that is, though.
I don't think it's him. No.
So in the meantime, did you ever see that 538 article calling John Goodman the greatest supporting actor? Period. Full stop.
Were there stats?
Yes, yes, yes. They showed that pretty much any time he's the lead actor, you get middling successes like, you know, King Ralph or whatever. But whenever he plays the second, third, or fourth person, he's got that perfect Midwestern supporting role that that makes him, like, all of those movies just blow through the roof.
Wow. Huh. There's something about us from the Midwest, huh?
Yep.
All right. Just kind of hang out.
Just brag about it.
Especially people from the St. Louis area, particularly.
Okay, all right. Hey, don't you want to introduce our guests?
Yes. Joining us, we're very happy today to have Amos and Kent from Ritual Misery live in your studio, Brian.
Yeah, dude. South by Southwest is a magical time. Thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us on. It's great to be here.
By the way, we're from the Midwest as well.
Okay, all right. All of you, outs. Outs.
Like, sure, you can have your Scandinavian Texans. They're okay.
There's some Irish in there, too.
Some Irish or whatever. No, but we are here, folks, to talk about cord cutting. So let's get right to it with our primary target. It's survey time in the life cycle of cord cutting. Everybody's doing surveys. Everybody's trying to figure out what you actually want out there. And two of these surveys caught my eye. TiVo itself surveyed people in the U.S. and Canada and found, not surprisingly, well, maybe surprisingly because of the lowness of the number, they found 17% of the people they surveyed do not subscribe to pay television, and that's on the rise. A fifth of those people became people who don't subscribe to pay TV in the past year. So big percentage of them are newbies to cutting the cord. Many said they didn't feel they needed cable between over-the-air TV and streaming services. And the other thing TiVo found that was sort of interesting is if you gave people the choice, they would choose 18 channels on average, and that would be all they would need. That's the optimum size for most subscribers. Now, it's not the same 18 channels for everybody, obviously, but about 18 channels is what most people need. Now, the other survey here that I found interesting was Leichtman Research survey of U.S. adults finding that for the first time, more people have Netflix than DVRs. So 54% of those surveyed in the U.S. have Netflix, 53% have a DVR, and DVR is still on the rise. Back in 2011, when they did this survey, only 44% had DVR, but even fewer, 28%, have Netflix. So Netflix growing faster than DVR use, even though both of them are growing. And I found that all of this together, particularly that bit about people telling TiVo they don't need cable TV because they get plenty between over-the-air TV and streaming services, the fact that people are just saying, you know what, I don't even need a DVR, I just want Netflix in some cases. How many people feel there's plenty to watch and don't need to have access to everything? We're always talking about the people like, I have to have sports or I have to have Game of Thrones. I think there's an unrepresented section of people out there, Brian, who are saying, you know, I don't really have a particular thing. I just want to be able to sit down and watch something good sometimes. And for that, Netflix might be good enough.
I believe that demographic is called anyone under 24 years old, right? Where it's like you grow up.
Well, they're watching YouTube. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Well, and plus, I would be really curious to hear how they qualified which people they surveyed, because I'm assuming they're surveying people who have televisions. There's a decent chunk of the young adult populace that's coming in not even bothering with a central television set, right? These are people who know that they're going to get everything from their friends or from online services. So number one, 17% still is shockingly low to me. However, for a number of people cutting the cord. But it's better than the 3% that we were reporting on 5 years ago, right? Where it definitely is an increasing trend. But the clear smartest play is still to stick to the traditional Hollywood machine of planning on broadcast television, focusing on primetime, doing big media ad buys, all of that boring stuff that we don't care about. 18 channels thing I thought was really curious, because I wonder, out of those 18 channels that people want, how much of those channels they even watch, because I suspect that really what they're saying is there's about 30 shows that I really mm-hmm. care about, and they happen to be on 18 channels, right?
Right. I'll need an ESPN or an HGTV for my lean back viewing. And then I need AMC for The Walking Dead. And then I need HBO for Game of Thrones. And then, oh, well, you know what? I need NBC because I really like that show, The Voice. Right. Like, there's 18 channels, but at what price? At what price could you just replace it by buying the shows?
All right. What about you, gentlemen? How many channels do you want? How many things do you care about?
You know, I cut the cord probably close to a decade ago. Wow. So, like, this is kind of a non-issue for me myself. But I can see, like, if I didn't have the streaming services, I could say 4 or 5 channels would probably suit my needs.
And just whatever happens to be on them?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to have a news channel and a sports channel and then something to watch television shows.
Which brings up the interesting question, like, how much do you guys care about the DVR? Because I'm convinced that people don't love DVRs. I'm convinced that they just get them automatically with their cable packages.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I never actually had a DVR because, like I said, it was like a decade ago that I cut the cord, and like that wasn't even a thing then. So I didn't even do the TiVo thing.
We cut the cord when we moved to Alaska last year, and other than the first maybe a couple weeks, nobody's missed it. And as far as DVRs goes, that's how we watched everything when we had cable. Mm-hmm. And now that we don't have cable,
there's no
need for it at all.
How do you get all your media? Do you just buy it? Or
either Netflix. We do buy a lot. We do buy a lot of movies, things like that, and a few TV shows that we're really concerned about. But for the most part, is the kids watch most of the TV anyway, and now we have Amazon Prime as well. My sister-in-law is, mm-hmm. you know, because I've got a family of 8. I got 8 people in my house, and like,
say those words again. how do you have to manage anything? Like, how many simultaneous connections are you allowed to have with Amazon?
Amazon, I believe, is 2, but we only have it set up on one machine. So Okay. Everybody just goes to mean the TV, the PS4 is the only thing with the Amazon setup on it. Other than my daughter's iPad, but my old iPad. So those two can be concurrent at the same time. And the babies usually just, you know, the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old watch that on either Amazon Prime, because they just added a slew of great kids' TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or Netflix. And my four-year-old is fully fluent in both Netflix and Amazon Prime. So.
Dude, my four-year-old as well. She'll get mad, and I'll start to load the wrong thing. She goes, yeah. No, Dad, not Netflix. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Well, no, we just recently got YouTube Kids put on there as well. So now she's telling me how to get to it. And I'm like, I'm the tech pro. Like,
yeah. Not anymore.
So,
well, I think this is really interesting because you are sort of describing what one of these surveys is talking about. The person who's like, I just need to have some good kids programming. I need to have some good stuff to watch. It doesn't sound like you're like, oh, no, I have to have ESPN or I have to have, right. You know, CNN or Fox News.
So what's the streaming service equivalent of channels? Like, what's the conversion rate there? Well, yeah, I think that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, what do you mean by conversion rate? Like in terms of
they say you need 18 channels, which, by the way, I agree with you. I would love to see the methodology on how they got to that number 18. But if you need 18 channels, how many streaming services do you need to compensate for those 18? Like, what's the ratio there?
I would say that
because I'm on three and it's replaced all 18.
Yeah, three is the max. Yeah. Like three is I'm already experiencing too much redundancy between Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon Prime. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, yeah, that's not going to get you ESPN yet. Hulu hasn't launched its live service. So if that's one of your channels, you might need four or five services. But I also don't count Netflix as a service. That's a channel, right? It's both a channel and a service. And it's a channel that you probably had in addition to your cable anyway. So when you're talking about those 18, I'm assuming they don't mean Netflix, but they do mean a lot of the stuff that's on Hulu or the stuff you would get on PlayStation View or Sling TV.
Yeah, I think a lot more people are watching a lot less than what a lot of people think. Because, I mean, really the only thing we're missing so far is like HGTV for that background noise.
Yeah.
And we've just replaced that with other background noise.
Better background noise.
Yeah, we have
like Bob's Burgers.
We have a jumpy cast
nonstop.
We have a jumpy cast in the house, so it's just constant background noise.
any other big surprises in here, Tom?
Not really. I mean, we talked about the 18 channels. We talked about the over the air. I really think that Netflix passing DVR is the one last thing I want to talk about because to me, I don't want to. You touched on this briefly. I don't want to manage a DVR. I know it's not hard. But I don't want to have to manage it. I don't want to think about how much storage do I have left? Did I keep all of these episodes? Did I set a max of 5 episodes? Am I going to have anything? I just want to have my shows there. And so I think that is one of the advantages that a Netflix or a Hulu has is, yes, shows do leave them from time to time. So that's a problem. But most of the time, if you want to watch something, it's there. And you don't have to manage it. You don't have to remember to record it.
Well, and plus also there's really only two types of viewing. There's full attention viewing where it's like usually you and your significant other, your whole family gathers to watch something as if it's a movie. And then there's like you say, lean back viewing, the stuff that you can have on because you want something on while you're waiting for Hearthstone to load or whatever, you know. And I think in that regard – both Netflix and Amazon do an admirable job of filling up that void. I guess Hulu as well. I got to tell you, man, it's here's what everyone thinks. We have spent half a decade arguing about what needs to change to make us happy. What we're seeing here is the beginning of us changing to be happy in what we have. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's why your first point is the best point. Kids these days, you know, and I shouldn't even say kids, but young adults too, don't have the same patterns they're trying to replace. Those of us who grew up with cable often are trying to replace cable. A lot of folks aren't trying to replace anything. They just want to watch interesting things, and the interesting things they want to watch weren't available on cable in a lot of places anyway.
Yep. Well, and plus also keep in mind that our experience of most of us here going all the way back to the days of analog cable television, it was astonishing how fast you could change channels. And in that microsecond blip, just get like, nope, crap. Wait, go back.
Right.
But starting in the late 90s, once we went to digital cable, we've never been able to recapture that. It's always been change channel 1, 2, 3, image starts.
That digital buffer, yeah. It kills your drive just to flip through the channel. So now you're actually looking for something, and I don't know if they happen in the same order, but you know, if you're coming up with a TV guide where you can actually see what's coming on, what channel to go to immediately.
Right. So now what we do is we browse titles of programming rather than stumbling across the programming
and plus
itself.
The TV, whichever cable box you had until maybe 4 years ago, didn't recommend anything for you.
Right.
Now it's categorized by how interested you might be in it and everything else. There's much more draw to click that button and start watching something you hadn't seen before.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, a killer feature of one of these streaming services will be a stream of video that flips through things based on what it knows you like and will let you just press a button to stop. Yeah. On something, but channel flips for you.
Or even just I keep talking about this idea of a digital concierge or something. You know, like it's like a bro on the couch flipping channels, and then you don't even have to touch a button. It just listens as you go like, whoa, 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 go back. Yeah, that looked good.
Yep.
By the way, I think sometimes I prefer to spend a little money on a show so I don't even have to fast forward through commercials on a DVR. That'll still cost you $2 or $3 per episode. Cord killers cost you less. It's absolutely free unless you want to support us at patreon.com/cordkillers. And even then, it can be as much as you want, as little as you want.
Did I ever tell you
the secret? I mean, it could be as little as a dollar. It could be $1 million. We're not stopping.
Did I ever tell you the secret of street performing? Street performance is the purest form of art I can think of because you have an audience that doesn't have to be there. They owe you nothing. They only stop if you provide some entertainment of value. And then only after the performance is over do you pass the hat and say, hey, man, was that worth something? Whatever you think that's worth, I'd like to have it. And in that regard, I began street performing. I began, you know, went on to tour colleges nationwide, doing big corporate events, traveled with major concert tours. And now here we are back street performing again. And I'm asking you guys, was that fun? Do we put on a good show for you? Do you get value out of this? If so, what do you think that's worth? Why don't you just put something in the hat over at patreon.com/cordkillers?
So are you saying that we could have concert tours of Cord Killers?
Get that's going to happen. I think we're looking at Nerdtacular this year,
Can't wait for our cord taming act. All right. While you pass the hat, we'll tell you how to watch all this great stuff. All right, folks. I've been waiting for this for a long time. BritBox is launching in the U.S. It's launched. It's here. You can get it. BritBox.
I was making a Breitbart joke. I'm sorry.
Breitbart launched a long time ago. This is different. It's not news. It's British television. BritBox is a $6.99 a month video service that brings you classic TV as well as TV currently airing in the UK, mostly from BBC Worldwide and ITV. AMC is also a minority partner in this. It's available on the web, Apple TV, iPhone, iPad, and Android. They've got Roku and Chromecast coming soon. It's not there right at launch. And so those of us who have said, you know what, I would pay you, BBC, to just let me access BBC's iPlayer as if I were inside the UK, outside the UK. This is the promise of that. We'll bring you all the BBC stuff. We're even got ITV on here. So if you look at the classic stuff, and Swamp Rat says the Roku app is out. So there you go. They've already covered that. If you look at the classic stuff, they've got Absolutely Fabulous, Are You Being Served? Any of the stuff you grew up watching on PBS that came from the BBC is pretty much here, except for Monty Python, because as we know, that's on CISO. And here's the problem, Brian. It's not logging into the iPlayer. It should be better because it's got ITV, right? But it doesn't have Downton Abbey from ITV. It doesn't, and I think I've got that right. Maybe I've got that wrong, but it doesn't have the ITV big hits. It doesn't have the BBC big hits because Sherlock isn't on here. That's on PBS. It has the stuff that isn't already sold to another service available for you.
Okay. So Tom, is it fair to say that you are the biggest Anglophile that I know?
Of the five people doing this show right now, I don't mean to speak for Kent Namath, but probably.
Yes. Okay. So with that in mind, could I possibly interest you in justifying this as for $6.99 a month, you can complete your access to everything?
Here's the problem. I'm not interested in this service right now.
Wow. You are in every way the target demographic. You are a cord-cutting Anglophile who wants very much to be able to access all of BBC content.
And yet, I did sign up for the free trial, but that was purely so I could look at it before I did this show. Mm-hmm. I wasn't interested in paying for it because if I'm going to watch Ab Fab or Are You Being Served, I'll just go buy them. I don't need to pay $7 a month for access to that. And any of the other stuff that I'm interested in watching, like Broadchurch or Sherlock or The British Voice, don't ask me why, but I find it fascinating, or The Great British Bake Off even, not all of it's in there. And so I'm looking like, what are all the things? I'm like, okay, what about BBC News? They've got some things in there, but the key with the iPlayer is everything that's on the BBC is available live and on demand. This is just too small of a slice of it where I'm like, well, it's not worth paying for on an ongoing basis. This is some stuff I might be interested in. Yeah, I'd like to watch the EastEnders sometime. There's other things like Holby that I've been curious about, but not curious enough to want to pay $7 a month for it.
Babcat just nailed it in the chat. We've talked about it before. When you do not serve a need, people will go to the black market, and Babcat is pointing out that it is cheaper to get a VPN to go be a British IP address.
I mean, that's definitely part of it. If there weren't a British iPlayer, the VPN wouldn't be as big of a draw, right? Because you can get the stuff I'm talking about elsewhere. You can get a lot of it on Netflix. You can get some of it on CISO. You can get some of it from PBS, right? It's there. Available legally, it's just not all in one place.
What about you, gentlemen? Are you as? Do you want to contest Tom's claim that he's the biggest Anglophile here?
No, he's definitely got me beat. But I was super excited when I first heard about this service. But I'm with Tom. This does not offer, like, I was expecting and hoping that this would be like the back catalog of the BBC.
You could dive into all the Doctor Who's.
I wanted all the Doctor Who.
Yeah,
all of it. Flying Circus. I'm real happy that Are You Being Served is on there, but $6.99 a month, it's no, they're just not enough.
It is also awkward pricing because it's not $4.99 CISO pricing and it's not $9.99 Netflix pricing. And instead, and it's not niche enough and it's not mainstream. You've heard me say it before, but this really reeks of mushy middle. It's not a complete catalog. It's not niche enough. It's not cheap enough, and it's not expensive enough. And
now, here's the thing. Swamp Rat in our chat room, also probably a bigger Anglophile than me, simply because he has subscribed to it. He had Acorn TV, which was another British television service that was trying to get access to things and bring them to American audience. He's canceled Acorn in favor of BritBox. So this has an audience. There are people who are going to spend $6.99 a month for this because they're big EastEnders fans in the U.S., and this is the way to get it. Or there's plenty of stuff on here to entertain them. So I'm not saying it's a failure. It's not big enough to become a hit, though. And that's where your pricing argument starts to make sense. Like, well, at $6.99, how many people are they dissuading who might have plunked down $4.99? It's hard to say. But it could also be the start of something, because the other side of this is they don't have all of Doctor Who, Monty Python, all of that, because those rights were already given to other people before they decided to do this. But if this starts to bring those rights back in, as new hits are created, as old deals expire, this could get better and better and better. So I can't decide if this is just, it's super niche and people like Swamp Rat are going to love it and that's great and they'll probably get an audience, but it's not going to be big. Or is this the seed of something that eventually becomes the BBC iPlayer in the US?
It's still twice the price of my VPN, which gives me all the access to everything.
Not that we condone right on the backs of everyone who pays their licensing fees in England.
And granted, like, yes, that is a practical fact, right? But a lot of people are not going to want to deal with that. And a lot of people who know how to use a VPN, which is a smaller slice, aren't going to want to deal with the legal uncertainty. They'll feel guilty about it, or the fact that they constantly change IP addresses and you have to do some chasing sometimes will dissuade them. So if there were a perfect legal alternative, I think it would do quite well.
I agree. I do agree. And as a matter of fact, you know, I don't know if it's an artifact of reaching a certain age or trying to be an example for the kids. I mean, you're talking to somebody who used to be at one point a completely unrepentant pirate of literally anything and everything. But as my means increased and my responsibility increased and my accountability increased. Like, it has been a real blast to play everything legit for the last half decade or so. Really, since we started doing frame rate, that's when I realized, oh crap, I'm standing up and having people watch what I'm doing, and yeah, that's important.
Brian Brushwood, repentant pirate, growing up in a digital age.
Put that on a T-shirt.
Yeah, I think I would highly recommend checking out BritBox. I wish they didn't have to take your credit card for you to get the 2-week trial, but you know, they do allow you to cancel it online and all of that. So if you're interested, you can go plow through to the background, and they have Upstairs, Downstairs, and Blackadder and Faulty Towers and lots of stuff that is really good. Anyway, that's it.
But not like that. But like, meanwhile, if you want to watch Black Mirror, just load up Netflix and
If you want to watch. Although Black Mirror, I think, is Channel 4, so that wouldn't be in here anyway.
Oh, okay.
Theoretically. But that's the problem, right? You're like, wait, but isn't that a British show? Like, they, yeah.
Yep.
They need to get better deals to make this work. And maybe that's the plan. Like, soft launch it, get the super hardcore people to subscribe to get it going so that you have something you can bring stuff to, and it will make monetary sense.
And if you doubt that they can't make this a winner in the long term, just remember how poor the original offerings were on the streamable version of back when we called it Netflix streaming and not just
right.
Netflix. Mm-hmm. Like they had a garbage selection, and it was largely it wasn't until they got the Stars deal that it was kind of decent, and then they doubled down. They did original programming. All of that could be the playbook that they are beginning with BritBox.
Oh, that's such a good point, because I'd forgotten now. Someone told me when Netflix streaming launched, nobody is going to watch this because not everything in my DVD queue is available there.
Yeah. And then right? And how insane does that sound now?
Yeah.
It's like, well, of course not. But what they got is awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's – I mean, we do all this to watch stuff. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Couple big Game of Thrones announcements in the last week. Season 7 of Game of Thrones will premiere on July 16th. Remember, this is a shortened 7-episode season, so it's premiering a little later for multiple reasons, but that's one of them. And there will be a Season 8, but it will only be 6 episodes long. There have been some rumors kicking around that maybe Game of Thrones Season 8 would be a little longer than we expected, but it's not. It's going to be 6 episodes at least. That's what Benioff and Weiss were saying this weekend at South by Southwest.
Fair enough. I at this point, I am so, so happy to have been brought the greatest gift in television history, certainly in fantasy, the fantasy space, hands down, that they could do no wrong. And maybe even I'll hate the end and I'll have the books to look forward to.
Yeah, because the books, while generally going to be the same, are going to get there in a different way. So it's a whole different journey.
Yeah.
Someone created a cut down of all of Breaking Bad, all 5 seasons, into a 2-hour movie, put it up on Vimeo, and then, of course, it got pulled down. But it was up for a while before it got all the attention and got yanked.
I watched the whole thing because I knew that it was not long for this earth. It was actually posted a week ago, and it was really interesting because you use whatever you have, and as a result, some of the edits end up changing motivations of people. In the beginning of Breaking Bad, the television show, you see him teaching class, and it is an indicator of how hard things have gotten for him, right? But they open with this intercut of the house being trashed, and you hear the voiceover of him and Skyler going to the house all starry-eyed and optimistic from a flashback a long time ago. And she's pregnant with their son in the flashback, but then they cut it to where it just goes straight into her being pregnant with Holly in current time. So it sets it up as he's a starry-eyed optimist who gets handed this death sentence. And as a result, you don't get the down on his luck, wanting to punch the world vibe that you get from the first few episodes. But I'll say this: I mean, there's a lot that's not in there. There's some music choice changes that are going to upset people. But it is a solid 3-act, 2-hour story that, by and large, gets the main beats of the story right. I mean, there's a lot of action, a lot of interesting choices. Like, I don't want to get too spoilery, but a lot of stuff happens off screen, And if you're somebody who knows you'll never get around to watching all five seasons of Breaking Bad, it's too big of a commitment. I would say if it ever resurfaces again, if you run across it, I would say it is definitely a worthy investment of your time so that you can at least catch the gestalt of what everyone else has experienced.
And you know, what's so funny about this is, this is like the Reader's Digest version of a book, yeah, right?
It's
like Breaking Bad is a full book. Like, it's a book length story. And this is, hey, if you want a shorter version of it, check this out. And as someone who's seen all of Breaking Bad, I still want to see that. I would pay to rent that movie, especially because I've seen Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Well, and as somebody who has had to settle for a lot of abridged audiobook versions of famous novels, this did not feel very different from that at all. And it was really interesting to look at the Reddit thread that blew it up yesterday. A lot of people are like, man, I didn't like this change, that change. Where there's no way you can possibly express the nuance and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, meanwhile, it's like, no, I think they pretty much did it. The guy did a good job.
I think this could be a cool thing to happen to these new thicker, meatier television shows. I'm curious what Kent Namus think.
I was just sitting there thinking, what other shows would you like to see this on? Because like Friends would not make a good 2-hour special. It's a comedy show, you know.
Correct.
But it's a longer form.
I would definitely do this for Mad Men. I was unable to finish Mad Men. I got a season and change in.
Same here.
And I'm like, just tell me the main story.
Sopranos is the same way. I would love to see like a shortened version. Like, I would love to experience Sopranos, but I don't have 100 hours to dedicate to watching the show right now.
Fringe would be another one. I'd even watch Fringe as a 6-hour miniseries or something.
For sure. This may be something they're onto then. I mean, this would be great.
As a matter of fact, there used to be, back in the 90s, something called 30-minute movies, where they would get the licenses to 2-hour, you know, films, and they would cut them down to just 26 minutes with commercials. And it would be like, you know, Predator, you know, all my favorite parts of Predator without the crap pulled out and told as a story. But I would imagine that it was just too expensive to license it that way.
They still have that. It's called Movies with Mikey.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Netflix announced it will bring a second season of A Series of Unfortunate Events out, and they did it with a puzzle teaser that some people found charming and other people found annoying. It wasn't a very hard puzzle, though.
How did it go?
I put a teaser up, and then the teaser video had like certain parts highlighted, like
URL,
www, and then the actual domain was just one long phrase that was highlighted in yellow. So it was
URL,
super easy to figure it out.
Okay.
I think some people were mad that they had to do that. Oh, I go to vastlyfrighteningdecision.com. I get it.
Okay, that's dumb. Their complaints are dumb. I think that's adorable. Keep in mind, this comes from somebody who does puzzles every week with the Modern Rogue.
Yeah, yours are more difficult than that.
Yeah,
for sure. Also, Iron Fist premieres March 17th. And hey, good news is it's up to 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh boy.
It was at zero.
Oh boy. At one point,
with reviews in. So
that's troubling for me because I've been following the Netflix Marvel shows.
The Defenders build up.
I love it. I love every moment of it. And for this one to be received so poorly has really got me worried about Defenders.
So what are you doing in your headspace to prepare for this? Like, are you, because I assume you're going to watch it anyway.
I'm going
to
watch it anyway. Yeah. I'm just going to take a deep breath and hope for the best.
They dropped that magic phrase. Well, this one's really, it's for the fans. It's not for the critics. And it's like, that's code for, Bill eat anything.
Yeah.
And by the way, Gauchem says, does anyone care what the Rotten Tomatoes score on a TV show is? And rightly so. It's not like we look to Rotten Tomatoes for TV shows, but it is sort of a good Metacritic rule of thumb. And when it's this low, like if it was 50%, then you'd be like, oh, maybe it should be 70%. But when it's 14%, with the majority of reviews coming in and every review I've seen from places like IO9, et cetera, are saying, that I think that's pretty damning.
Well, keep in mind also that it's not Metacritic is very different from Rotten Tomatoes because Metacritic says, in general, everybody gave this around a 7. So the Metacritic score is a 7 out of 10, which is different. Rotten Tomatoes only breaks everything down to it's either a positive review or a negative review, which means polarizing content gets dinged much heavier on Rotten Tomatoes. I remember at the time Fight Club came out, you know, Finding Nemo had 99% positive reviews and Fight Club had like 60 or something because people either loved it deeply or they hated the violence on there. And so, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to be the case on this, but I'm suggesting that, that you know, maybe those we're down to 12%. Maybe those 12%.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, right? If it was 60%, you could – that's exactly what I was trying to say is you could make an argument like, well, some people liked it. Some people hated it. Maybe the score is a little off at 12% now.
This is out of 12 reviews for the whole first season, a 4.45 out of 10 average rating.
Ooh.
Yeah. Also, the difference between Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes is my wife works for Rotten Tomatoes.
But. Oh, man. Oh, we got a new game. New game.
And hey, another new game. Watch Hacking the System quickly before it leaves Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's off Netflix tomorrow, right?
Today's the last day, or maybe tomorrow's the last day.
And I can testify that you can actually watch the entire series in a single run and not have to break or anything else. Just make sure you got a six pack with you and just enjoy the whole thing.
I get better as it goes on.
get your copy repairman's hat and your six pack. Settle in for a good night. If you do miss it though, if you're already watching this after it has left Netflix, just go subscribe to The Modern Rogue. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Something to watch a week from Tuesday, so that would be March 21st, is the movie draft for the summer on a special Night Attack, March 21st at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, dude, if you enjoy watching us play our game, you can play along with us. If you watch live, you can watch us as people make terrible mistakes, and then you can spend money and actually participate in the chat room version.
It is free to play.
All right.
It is free to play.
Free to play.
No pay to win.
Free to play, hard to master, as we like to say, the movie draft. All right, let's talk about what we're watching. Starting with you, Kent, what have you been looking at on your screen?
Really, the only current thing that I've been keeping up on religiously is Star Wars Rebels.
Me too, man. And, so good.
Oh, God. It is so good. I loved Clone Wars. Rebels is just the next thing, and it's perfect. It's that.
Did you watch Star this Wars. Week's yet?
I have not watched this week's. I always watch it with my son, and I've been in Austin all week. So
yeah, that's kind of what I figured. And I don't want to spoil it, but next week's has been the big, like, they keep promoing. They've been promoing next week's episode forever because it's going to have Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Maul in it, right? That's in all of the trailers. This week's episode was great. You'd think like, oh, this will be the week episode.
Right.
This was a really strong episode. It's been killing it, I think.
Yep. Awesome. Something that I saw recently too was the OA. I don't know if you guys watch the OA.
I haven't watched it, but Bryce,
right.
You did, right?
Yeah, I dug it. It's weird. It's a weird show. It's not for everybody.
It was one of those things that it's different enough, and it's an original story that you've never seen anywhere. And I really enjoyed it, but the finale killed it for me. Like, it was the biggest letdown I've ever had watching a TV show.
The finale of that first season really, like, shocked me for the setting of it, and supposedly we'll get answers in season 2.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, and I'll watch season 2. When it comes out, I'll watch it. I'll give it a second chance.
All right, Amos, it has come to my attention that you only watch whole decades of television at a time.
That's what I do. Kent recently turned me on to the CNN series on Netflix, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And if you're into documentary films, it's amazing to take a decade, summarize one aspect of it, and then expand upon that for an hour to an hour and a half just on that one subject. And it's one of those times when I'm watching entertaining television and it's factual stuff. And I'm learning, like I'm actually learning something about a recent history that I didn't know. And I'm getting ready to crack into the 80s. I just finished the 70s, and it's so good. It's so
awesome.
Good.
So where did all that content originally air? Just on CNN?
It's from several different news sources. CNN. Yeah. Because it's right now I've just caught up to the 70s, so Fox News went around or anything else. But yeah, it's from multiple news sources, and they're bringing in people from all different. ABC, NBC, all the old news broadcast and everything else.
But this is like, where can I go see this?
Oh, Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah, it's readily available.
It was originally aired on CNN. It's CNN produced.
Got it.
So regardless of what you feel about their news reporting, like, they are masters of the documentary.
Right on.
Yeah, it's really good.
And the other thing is The Man in the High Castle. I just finished season two. If you haven't seen that, like, I know Kent hasn't seen it. Why? That is such a good alternate reality.
I mean, you're going to have to convince me because I loved the pilot deeply. Mm. I got about three episodes in to the toothpick man, and he just seemed like such a cheesy villain that I just never found time to get back to it.
Once you realize he's not the villain, it's a totally different story.
That's fine, but I still have to watch.
Goes away pretty quickly, too.
Yeah, and season two is, of course, I believe season one ends the original book. But season two, it just continues to expand, and it's actually done to a much higher level, and the story is better, the acting, I think, is better, and the character placement, like where they are in geographic relation to each other, it starts to become its own character, that displacement, kind of like The Time does on 24.
Right.
It becomes its own thing, and that just ramps up right towards right to the very end. It keeps you going, and then the last episode has in the last 30 seconds it's like, what?
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah,
it changes the entire thing. It's great.
All right, Brian and I have watched Justified and The Expanse. We'll talk about that on Spoiler in Time. Anything else, Brian?
Yeah, do yourself a favor and look up the author. John Ronson is incredibly talented and very clever in the books he writes. He did a documentary years ago that he recently tweeted out with sort of, so I guess this is semi-blessing. He said that somebody said, hey, I found your documentary Stanley Kubrick's Boxes online, but I don't know if this is a bootleg. And so he retweeted it saying, hey man, a bootleg of this documentary is better than not seeing it at all, so please enjoy it. And of course, that's not his property, but that's between him and the BBC to fuss over. But it's fantastic. Stanley Kubrick, when he died, thousands of boxes of photographs of set locations, of crank letters, all throughout his house, all meticulously, as meticulous as you would expect Stanley Kubrick to be, is everything in there. And it's John Ronson exploring all those. At one point, he tracks down the guy who wrote a crank letter 40 years ago to Stanley Kubrick. It was great. I enjoyed it immensely.
The only thing I'll add is I'm still watching The Magicians season two and enjoying the hell out of it. It's sort of the perfect sword complement to The Expanse's laser, and they both air on Wednesday nights on Sci-Fi. We just interviewed Brittany Curran, who plays Fenn on Sword and Laser, last week, and she's delightful. So can't recommend it enough either. It's still good, and I'm having a good time. Bryce, what are you on the lookout for?
Hey, I got an update first. We talked about Netflix's romantic dramedy Love when it debuted last year, and season two is out now. That's the sort of black comedy with
Gillian Anderson?
No, Gillian Jacobs, the blonde girl from Community, and Paul Rust. What's his name? The guy who not Jude Law. Oh man, Judd Apatow. It's a Judd Apatow joint. So check that out. That's on Netflix. The show I wanted to talk about today is Colony. This is from listener B. Lissa. She sent this in. So this is set in L.A. a year after a militaristic alien invasion. And I think what's really great about it, especially the first episode, is that it really this world feels lived in as it should, you know, a year after this great invasion. And so Los Angeles has been occupied by aliens and a militaristic force, and it's really cool. I think you get parallels almost of like Nazi occupied France, almost of like having to live adjacent to a conflict zone. I think it's really cool. It's just it's a good dynamic, and the first episode does a really good job of setting up the long arc of the resistance and they're called the RAPs, or the basically the militaristic force that is trying to do the deeds of the aliens, whatever those may be. So check that out. That's on USA. There are 10 episodes on season one now on Netflix. Season two premiered in January and is airing on USA.
Yeah. If you like Josh Holloway with his shirt off.
Yes.
Or the woman who played Lori Grimes, you'll love The Colony. And there's other reasons to love it as well. Check it out. And if you got something we should be on the lookout for, thank you, Melissa, for sending that. It's good to hear from you. Email cordkillers@gmail.com. All right, real quickly, before we get to the front lines, I have mentioned the book Pilot X before. It's my novel about a pilot who flies a time ship and gets sucked into events bigger than him and has to decide to save the universe or not. It's out. It's on bookshelves. I actually bought one at a Barnes & Noble myself the other day just for the experience of it.
How cool was that experience?
It was crazy.
Did you do that thing where it's like you pick up copies and sign them and then put them back?
No, I didn't. But when I went up to buy my copy, the woman looked at my credit card and went, "Is that you?" And I said, "Yes." I'm like, "I just wanted a souvenir of buying it off the shelf. I wanted the experience." And she's like, "Is there another copy?" And I'm like, "Yeah, there's one more." She's like, "Would you want to sign it?"
Yeah, oh, that's great. She's great.
Like, "They sell better. We could put a sticker on it." And they even ordered a few more. So I'm going to go back and sign those. So if you shop at the Marina Del Rey Barnes & Noble, there was a signed copy of this on the shelf there. But yeah, it's officially out March 14th. So the Audible version should be available March 14th. There's a Kindle version as well. And all of that, of course, you can buy it direct at inkshares.com. And the big thing I need now that it's officially out is if you have bought it, please review it at Amazon.com.
All right. Let me make this very, very clear. We have had a tantric pace to bring us to this moment. Now is go time. And you can leave a totally honest 5-star review that says something to the effect of, "I just bought this book. I haven't read it yet, but I know that Tom Merritt is fantastic and I know I'm going to love it." That is totally legit. Everybody leave. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. You're going to have to cover the next segment, Tom, because I'm gonna post
a review. You're going to go do a review?
Yeah.
Well, awesome. All right. Well, and there you go, folks. Brian Brushwood leading by example. So if you're at all interested in Pilot X, please go review it at Amazon.com, especially if you bought it and read it. Well, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Sling TV has brought its cloud DVR feature to Fire TV users. And now if you're getting into the beta, you got to pay $5 a month for it. And you only get 50 hours of storage. So they're starting to roll out the actual product now. You knew it was going to be charged for eventually. Not all channels can be recorded. And if you're one of the beta testers who got in on the Roku version, you don't have to pay. They're grandfathering you in and you get 100 hours still. That's not going away. If you're a new tester, you have to have an Amazon device to get into the First Look beta program. But once you're in, you can access the DVR, not just on Roku and Fire TV, but also on Android and Android TV as well.
That's all great. I wasn't listening. You'll have to do the next segment, too.
DirecTV Now is giving its early adopters HBO access for free for a year. Try that for bribery. If you signed up for DirecTV Now before March 6th, you should have access to HBO Now. In fact, I got an email about it before this news even broke. I imagine the email is what broke the news. But they're basically saying, "Thank you for putting up with all of our bugs. Here's a free year of HBO. Please don't cancel." I'm curious if Amos and Kent, if either of you guys have tried either Sling TV or DirecTV Now.
So DirecTV, not so much. Sling TV is an option that we've weighed, but we've decided that we wouldn't get, at least my family of eight, that we wouldn't get enough usage out of it. It's just one more thing to suck down our internet that's capped up in Alaska.
Yeah, it's... I'm not interested in either one of the services. And like the whole thing with the DVR, like I'd rather have my content on demand, you know, like the DVR, even if it is in the cloud, that's just one more barrier to me.
Yeah. Well, and they have on demand versions. In fact, it always entertains me at PlayStation View when it asks me if I've used a DVR, like, "Do you want the DVR version or the on demand version?" And I'm like, "Well, they're both on demand, and the DVR version lets me fast forward, and the other one doesn't." So I'm using the DVR version. Nintendo America head Reggie Fils-Aimé told the Washington Post that Nintendo is talking to a number of companies about bringing services to the Nintendo Switch. That's the new game console from Nintendo that launched March 3rd. And Fisa May name-checked Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, saying those are things that will come in time. But he stressed that how you play and what games you play will continue to be Nintendo's focus. So they didn't, unlike the Wii U, launch with these services, but they do intend to bring them.
This is a smart play because I think they're still reeling from the mistake that the Xbox One did in its initial release at E3, where they spent their entire E3 announcement talking about all the TV you'll be able to watch on it, which nobody cares about. So I think this is the right idea. They can always add that stuff quietly where it makes sense, and it'll be exciting that more stuff is coming rather than trying to act like if they say you could play games on it, watch TV on it, blah, 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 it starts to sound more and more like an iPad. And that's not what they want to do.
Yeah. And they're pretty much selling it as a way to play Zelda right now. So anything that distracts from that really doesn't serve the message at the moment, I guess.
Agreed.
Hulu announced Friday that A&E Networks will be available as part of its live TV service when it launches later this year. That includes A&E itself, of course, History Channel, Lifetime, and Viceland or other A&E channels. However, Bloomberg reports that Viacom may be backing out of a deal with Hulu. Viacom's doing a lot to kiss up to cable networks. You know they pulled out of PlayStation View. Now it looks like they might be backing out with the upcoming Hulu service. And if you're wondering where Hulu is, they've got CBS, Fox, Disney, and Time Warner, allegedly, on board. So they'll probably end up getting NBC. They'll have A&E. They've already announced. So Viacom may be missing from a lot of these services when they launch.
Yeah. What's really weird, it's so fascinating to see how different the balkanization of content has been in this round with video versus audio. You know, in audio, we've talked about this before. You had that earthquake of piracy, and then you had the strong force of Steve Jobs saying, "Everyone get in line. You're going to make money again." And then whereas this case, you almost started to see it happen with video, but then everybody kind of hedged their bets. They're like, "Well, I don't know. It seems like what we have is worth something. You know, maybe we can." You know, it's like, "Well, CBS is going off on their own." Maybe it's like, "Well, yeah, but you're not CBS." I have no idea where this is headed, but it's fascinating to me.
I think it's very interesting that Viacom seems to be backing away, because that could prove to be a major mistake, or maybe it's going to be an amazing opportunity for them to do Viacom All Access, so you can get Comedy Central and MTV that way. I'm paying very close attention to see if the Viacom deal with Sling is maintained. Obviously, there's an expiration date on that, and when that expiration date hits, will they stick around with Sling TV or not? Because right now, Sling TV, big advantage there is, hey, I can get all those Viacom channels I can't get on PlayStation View or on Hulu, it looks like. Facebook signed a deal with Univision to stream 22 Major League Soccer matches in 2017. There will also be 40 Match Day Live analysis shows exclusively on Facebook. First match available on Facebook will be the Chicago Fire at Atlanta United FC, 4 p.m. Eastern time on March 18th. Facebook already has a deal with Liga MX to show Mexican soccer and is reportedly, and we talked about this before, in talks with Major League Baseball, although that has not been officially announced yet.
So you talk about the different services, how there's fragmentation going on between the channels and the services,
mm-hmm.
which is, it feels to me weird, because this right here, Facebook is free. So you can fragment all you want as far as, free streaming goes like that. And I don't mind at all as a person that just streams, because that's how I watched football this year, was on Twitter.
That's interesting, because I do mind, because I don't want to leave I can't be bothered. I never watch video on Facebook of any variety. I can't be bothered to leave Twitter and YouTube, and especially to enter the restrictive United People's Republic of Facebook.
Well, and that's a big thing, is with Facebook's video app, you have to sign in. With Twitter, you don't.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Mm. Yep.
All right, let's move on to our dispatches from the front. Cliff wrote in and said, "I'm forwarding this link to an article that extols the virtues of the new ATSC 3.0 digital over-the-air broadcast standard. From what I can see, it's very beneficial for cord killers. The broadcast signal is going to be stronger, have adaptable frequencies that can travel farther from the source and penetrate deeper into the home for better reception. You'll also be able to get a receiver box for that signal that can be hooked up to your home network so you can distribute it throughout the house from one source. by the way, something you can do with current broadcast already, but okay, it'll be built into the spec here. The new standard will also allow broadcasters to deliver their signal to targeted areas for significant purposes. Portable devices such as smartphones and tablets will also be able to receive the signal. Again, smartphones and tablets already have the ability to receive broadcast signals, but because you have these extra features in ATSC 3.0, there are some things that you can do with an app on a phone that you couldn't do with the broadcast standard. What Cliff's article doesn't emphasize is that they can also put digital rights management on this stuff. So they can lock down signals, make you pay for them, etc., whereas current broadcasts do not.
Man, I can't believe I'm thinking these dirty thoughts, but like, how much do you care about that now these days? Like, in a world
I'm
where
I'm very curious what the future of broadcast is, because as we heard in that survey earlier, a lot of people are starting to take advantage of the fact that you've just got this thing free in the air that you don't have to pay for and doesn't work against your data cap.
Yeah, I don't know. What about you guys? Is this something of interest?
Okay, fine. One more thing. Yeah, bring it on. But it's going to be like pirate radio. I mean, it's going to be there, but not necessarily for the purpose that they want it to be.
That's interesting. All right. Meanwhile, Dominic says, sorry, I'm just going to move on. I just realized, I really don't want to have a conversation about this standard. Hello, Cord Killers. Just wanted to drop a note saying that we signed up for YouTube Red explicitly for no commercial and YouTube Red Originals. We always use the YouTube Music app, and I have a teenager, so we had to get access to the Dan and Phil live tour content exclusively on Red. To be honest, I'm so used to YouTube not having commercial now that I get, get other people get ads and get very angry when I get one, when I see one, because I forgot to log in. Thanks for the great show, Dominic.
And then Chris added, our primary source of content for our living room TV is YouTube. Last summer, I was getting really annoyed with YouTube showing me ads for R-rated horror movies while my six-year-old daughter was watching. And YouTube offered me Red for the entire summer for $3. So I jumped on it and kept it after 3 months were up. Can't imagine going back to ad-infested YouTube.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ben Foote says he's a longtime listener. He's a software engineer by profession. He likes long walks on the beaches. And recently heard more and more of his coworkers are using Android / Kodi boxes to access day of movies and to stream any shows they want for free. We all know doing this is illegal. I am not a lawyer, but was wondering if you guys could lay down some facts for these wayward coworkers for me. Their argument for doing this seems to hinge on two insane points. One, it doesn't say it's illegal to do this like it does at the beginning of DVDs and Blu-rays. Two, streaming isn't the same as downloading and is therefore legal. I know I've read recent articles about some resellers of fully loaded Kodi boxes in the UK getting into trouble with the law, but I'd really appreciate it if you could scare straight the folks who thinks it's okay to steal.
Listen. When I broke into the liquor store, there wasn't a sign on the door that said it was illegal to break into the liquor store, right? So it's legal, right? Right, Brian?
Well, that's the funny part, right? The reason there's no "this is illegal" warning at the beginning is because the people who stole the movie cut out the sign that says that this is illegal.
So no, having a thing not say it's illegal doesn't make it legal. That's just silly. The number two point is a more reasonable thing to believe. Like, I'm not downloading it. I'm not making a copy. I'm streaming it. So I'm not culpable. And the fact of the matter is, in a lot of these cases, you may be downloading it. It may feel like streaming, but you're actually downloading, in which case you could be culpable of making a copy. And the other thing is, even if you're accessing a site by streaming versus downloading, if you know that it's illegally distributing that, you could be found to be involved in contributory infringement by streaming from it knowingly. So if they know it's a copy violation and they're doing it anyway, then they're breaking the law. The fact of the matter is, and I know you want me to scare them straight, Ben, is that enforcement is not as likely to catch you if you're streaming than if you're not. So that doesn't make it legal, but if you're worried about getting caught, that's a whole different conversation.
Meanwhile, you, of course, are allowed to legally back up all the materials that you buy.
Unless you circumvent copyright violation. Yeah. Or unless you circumvent copyright. That's what the DMCA says. You can't circumvent copyright in order to back up things.
Meanwhile, Chris writes, I was inspired by the recent emailer's chicken challenge result with his DirecTV account. I have the HD Genie DVR with two additional mini Genies and pay $150 a month. I anticipated having no DirecTV for the weekend, but the chance of saving a good chunk of change outweighed the possibility of missing the next Walking Dead. If I had to wait for customer retention to call me back in a day or two, so be it. So I got a regular service rep and explained that, based on my viewing habits, I could buy the shows I wanted to watch and it would still be much cheaper than my $150 a month bill, so please cancel my account. Between you and me, I hadn't looked at a single price comparison. The rep offered to reduce my bill to $106 a month, but I said, nope, still too high, please cancel the account. He quickly came back to me with the price of $86 a month for the next year and could throw in a special they were running where I'd get HBO, Showtime, Cinemax for 6 months with no need to cancel when the time was up. I declined the free sports ball package as no one in our house watches sports. I felt that I was quite fair for the package and the equipment and reluctantly, air quotes, accepted his offer, saving me about $65 a month. Onward, Chicken Challengers. Keep up the great work. Well done, man.
Yeah.
More than 60% off.
Half the battle of negotiation is believing that it's okay to cancel. So well done, Chris. And well done, Kent and Amos. Thank you guys for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having us on. This has been a blast.
Yeah, where can we see more of your lovely faces and voices?
RitualMisery.com.
RitualMisery.
Yep, there's links to all of our other stuff.
Ritualistic there. Practices of misery, what will people find there?
We have a podcast that's basically a celebration of all things geek. No matter what you're into, if it's not hurting anybody, let's go talk about it and explore and learn.
Wow, that got way more interesting very quickly.
Yeah, we didn't discuss that description previous. No, but if you're a geek and you want to hear what other geeks say about the geeky things we all love, check us out.
Or if you're a geek and you want to come talk about your geekiness.
Yep.
Geekness.
Get your geek on.
Geekyhood. Yeah, there
get
you go.
Get it on.
That's right.
RitualMisery.com. Our website is CourtKillers.com. Our email address is CourtKillers@gmail.com. We're live on DiamondClub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll cut your cords next time, whether you want us to or not.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Court Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/courtkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
With you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.